beasts in the wilderness, the silent witnesses of temptation. Almost unnerving at first glance, the picture is strange. And then, tucked quietly into the Gospel of Mark, a detail that feels almost out of place, yet deeply intentional. He fasted for 40 days in the wilderness, facing hunger, weakness, and the voice of the tempter. He was with the wild animals. Mark 1 verse 13 opens up something deeper, older, and more symbolic than it seems at first. It's not just empty space. It's alive and bursting with danger, silence, and creatures that don't belong to humanity. It's a place where Christ stands, not as a victim, but as someone who moves through it unharmed. So why were there wild animals with Jesus? The first layer is the wilderness itself. In biblical thought, the wilderness isn't just geography, but a spiritual landscape. It was where Israel wandered, prophets were formed, demons were believed to dwell. It represents disorder, testing, and the absence of human control. Jesus enters the wilderness as he steps out of Eden. Eden was ordered, cultivated, harmonious. The wilderness is fragmented, untamed, and dangerous. There are animals in that wilderness. They're not domesticated, they're not named, they're not under human authority. They're not evil, but they're no longer aligned with humanity as they were in the beginning. The fall made man and beast tension. Violence, fear, and survival replaced harmony. Yet here stands Jesus among them. No conflict, no attack, no fear. The text doesn't mention struggle, just presence. He was with the wild animals. In Genesis, Adam names the animals, and there's a peace between them. Humanity and creation are in a kind of harmony, but once sin enters the world, that unity breaks down. Animals become sources of fear, the ground is cursed, and the relationship changes. So when Jesus stands with wild animals without conflict, it's a sign of restoration. He's not just enduring temptation, but he's embodying a return to what was lost. The second Adam stands where the first failed, not in a garden, but a wasteland. Even then, creation doesn't rise against him. The wild animals become silent witnesses. Also, there's a prophetic layer. In Isaiah, there's a vision of a future kingdom where wolves and lambs live in peace. It's not just poetry, it points to the reconciliation of all creation. The presence of animals with Jesus in the wilderness is a shadow of that future reality breaking out. It is as if the wilderness itself pauses. For a moment, everything holds its breath as the Son of God stands in the middle of chaos. As a result of the Gothic tone of this scene, there's also a darker reading. Wilderness isn't just a natural danger, it's a spiritual confrontation too. The tempter's there. The hunger's real. The isolation is complete. Wild animals are symbols of the harshness and severity of the environment, so they make up part of the atmosphere of threat. They reinforce the reality that this isn't a gentle retreat. This isn't a quiet meditation in nature. It's a confrontation in a place that is uncertain. It reminds us that Jesus isn't shielded from the raw edges of existence. Yet, even in that harshness, there's no mention of harm. There's an authority here. Not one that dominates or destroys, but one that restores order simply by being present. Jesus doesn't tame animals in the narrative. He doesn't command them. He's just there. Christ is described as the one through whom all things were made. He is not separate from creation. He's its origin. So when he stands with wild animals, it's not an intrusion, it's a return. The exile motif is also present. Humanity is driven out into a world that's no longer safe after the fall. The wilderness becomes a place of wandering, testing, and confronting the consequences of sin. Jesus enters that space willingly. He doesn't avoid it. He walks in there, fasts in it, and faces temptation. Wild animals are part of that exile landscape. They are reminders that the world isn't what it used to be. But they are also reminders that redemption isn't limited to humanity. Creation itself is part of the story. There's a groaning going on in creation, Paul says. Animals with Jesus can be thought of as a quiet acknowledgement of that groaning. They're there, in the wilderness, as he begins the work that will eventually lead to restoration. The stillness at that moment feels haunting. There is no recorded movement, no description, just coexistence. It's like a painting frozen in time. There are creatures around Christ that should represent danger, but nothing breaks the silence. Christ, weakened by fasting, surrounded by creatures that should represent danger. Often power is seen as force, as dominance, as control. But here, power is shown as peace in the face of chaos. Authority is shown as harmony, not conquest. Wild animals remain untamed, but something about Christ's presence changes everything. In addition, it asks us to think about what temptation is all about. Temptation isn't happening in a vacuum. It's happening in a world that's watching, even if silently. Animals become part of the setting, part of a witness to this confrontation. It makes the scene more vivid, more grounded, more real, and they aren't irrelevant details. They're part of the story's texture. The test isn't sanitized. It's raw, physical, and spiritual. While the animals remind us that the incarnation isn't abstract, it's embodied. Jesus experiences hunger, isolation, and danger. He doesn't bypass the human condition. He enters it fully. Jesus calms storms, multiplies food, heals the sick. He demonstrates authority over nature and disease. But here in the wilderness, there are no miracles, just endurance. The animals are still there. There are times when authority isn't about changing the environment, but about being faithful within it. The wilderness doesn't become a garden during those 40 days. It stays harsh. It stays empty. But Christ remains steadfast, while the animals become part of that endurance. In their presence, the narrative gains a layer of realism and symbolism that points both back to Eden and forward to restoration. This detail may be brief, but its implications are huge. It speaks of harmony lost and hinted at again. It speaks of authority that doesn't need to shout. It speaks of creation that recognizes its creator. Most importantly, it reminds us that even in the most desolate places, where danger feels close and silence feels heavy, there is a presence that doesn't disrupt the world violently, but quietly restores it.